just as I was giving kids something to do during the service, and I know that just because we grew up, it doesn't mean that our learning styles change. So today, if you're a sketcher or a doodler, on the back of your bulletin there's space, a little blank space. I invite you to draw a bridge, and you'll see why in a little bit. See what that looks like. So first we're starting with a little poll this morning. I'm calling it an adventure poll. How many of you would say you would call yourself an adventurer? You like to have adventures. All right? So some of you, how many of you would say you are afraid of heights? Okay? And how many are not afraid of heights? Okay, we're going to look at a couple pictures, and I would love to know, would you be willing to do this? Okay, let's say the no's. Who's a no? No, I would not stand on that thing above the Grand Canyon. Who's like, yes? And who here has actually done it already? Anybody been there to the Grand Canyon? Okay, would you cross this bridge? I get some, the no's are emphatic, all right? They are just like, you know right away. How about this bridge? Okay, no's, and yes, someone, and this one. Or this one, all right? All right, how about this? Okay. Oh, I didn't know I had one more. No, thank you. All right, and now I want you to, we're going to take it a little safer, but picture your favorite celebrity, whoever that is. Maybe you're Justin Timberlake, a Taylor Swift, Whoopi Goldberg, whoever your person is. Pretend that person shows up at your house and says, I've always wanted to meet you. I have a limo out front. Jump in. We're going on an adventure. Would you go? Okay. How about this? Your best friend. Best friend or your favorite person comes to your house. And this is like, this is, imagine yourself also with the body that you'd want to have to be able to do this, you know, that you can just leave at will. Okay? So your best friend shows up, says, get in the car. We're going on a road trip. I packed for you. Would you go? Okay. Here about this one. God shows up and says to you, pack up everything. I mean everything, even those tax returns from 7 years ago that you haven't shredded yet. Clothes, medications, a baseball, your collection of baseball hat or sweatshirts, your Nintendo Switch, your dog, your cat, your Nespresso machine, because you are moving. I'm not going to tell you where, but I promise you it's going to be great. You're going to love it when you get there, and it's going to be good. Would you go? Okay, good for you. Well, that is what happens to Abram in Genesis chapter 12. So Abram is the character we're talking about today. Jess introduced us to him through the kids this morning. Abram, you could maybe pronounce Abram, but we're going to go with Abram. And Abram will also, in chapter 17, undergo a name change. So never skip a Sunday when we're in this series called The Source, because you might miss a key part of the story. So here's a quick picture of Abram's family tree. So last week, we looked at chapters, if we're on 12 today, we must have been on 10 and 11. And I said you should never skip a genealogy because they're important, and we totally skipped the genealogy. So here's the genealogy. There was a man named Terah, and he had a son named Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and these are their families. So we're going to Abram. This is a post-name change kind of thing, and his wife, and they're going to eventually have Sarah. They are descendants of Noah also. So this is where we are kind of with our little genealogy family tree. And so here we have this person named Abram, and he plays largely not only in today's chapter but in many of the stories to come. His name will be said over and over and over again. So in Genesis chapter 3, it starts like this, verse 1. The Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So there it is. God shows up at Abram's door and says, pack up your stuff. Pack up everything. Don't forget the dog and the cat and the camel and the mule. Don't forget all the things. We're going to move. So we are introduced to this story of a person named Abram, and the story, it starts with God. The writer of Genesis wastes no words and jumps right in, and somehow we find that Abram and God are having a conversation, and the conversation's more of a monologue. God's doing the talking here, and Abram is the one who is listening. And God tells or commands Abram, go. Come on, let's go. Pack up everything you own, the people you love, leave the home that you've always known, leave your relatives and friends, and follow me to a new one. God says, I promise you it's going to be great. You will be blessed. I will make a whole nation of people in your name. And so here we come to know this person named Abram through this conversation with God, but we only know what God says. And we read nothing about how Abram felt about this command. So I want to just pause and try to imagine. I love those of you who are faithful who said if God showed up at your house, you'd just jump in the car and go. But for those of us that maybe ask a few more questions, think about Abram in this case. This is potentially his first ever encounter with God. Abram's not mentioned before except for the genealogy. God's relationship to Abram's family isn't mentioned before. If he has any prior experience with God, Yahweh, or even knowledge of Yahweh, the writer of Genesis has not let us know that in the first 11 chapters. The writer of Joshua, actually a few books later, gives a better hint of Abram's religious upbringing. In chapter 24, Joshua says that Terah, Abram's father, worshipped other gods. So now it sounds like Abram is the first one in his family to meet and experience Yahweh. The one God shows up and stands before Abram and says, let's go. There's no details given about how the conversation takes place or where it was. The writer is more concerned about the content of the message from God than how Abram received it. The message is a command, and it's a big deal. The implications for this man and for his people are huge. Abram has a lot to lose. He has a life. He has a wide and extended family that live nearby. He's in the area where his ancestors had settled. To leave means to walk away from family land, to relinquish a potential inheritance, and to lose the support of the people that he knows. And people do that all the time. People move. They move to a different city. They move to a different state. They move to a different country. People move and learn their way around. They adapt to new cultures. They try to master new languages. But Abram's moving date is set on an ancient calendar, and that is different. In this way, there was no map for God to show him where he was going. God doesn't even name a country. I'm going to move you to Botswana or Ethiopia or Sweden, of all places. He doesn't even name a country. There's no map for God to say, hey, Abram, just follow this path. There's no superhighway or well-worn path to travel on. Did you know they're walking? As he sets out, there's no coach bus or a nice Cadillac SUV. There's not even like a VW bus or a nice sedan with a car top carrier. They're going to walk. Or ride a beast of burden if they're lucky, and they are going to camp out. They will hunt and gather their food. They will carry everything with them as they go with no idea how far, how long, and who they are going to encounter on the way. God is calling Abram to a new land, but not only that, it's a new life and an unseen future. God might as well be calling Abram to hurl himself into a canyon, I think. And the canyon or a gorge is a metaphor that I want to explore today, which is why I kind of started showing you those pictures. And Abram is going to move on into this mysterious new life, an uncharted course with no discernible path. This is what the future looks like, Abram. It's going to be great when you get there, but I'm not going to tell you all the details that happen in between. Would you go? There are so many unknowns. This isn't an adventure to embark on. This is a blind belly flop into the great unknown. And all that Abram has to go on is a promise. He has a promise, and the promise is nice. I mean, they're good promises. I'm going to make you into a great nation. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to care for you. You're going to be known well. It's a great promise. And it's a promise that is desirable but seemingly unreachable. There are some details about this promise that make it seem impossible. We'll unpack those in the chapters to come. But if the future's a canyon for Abram, then the promise is a bridge. And to borrow from a favorite author, Barbara Brown Taylor, she says it's a rope bridge across a gorge, a deep gorge where you cannot see the other side, and the bridge is made of ropes. Did I put that picture in there again, Todd? Yeah, I like this one because I can't see the sign. We can just kind of see a little picture of the bridge. And so God says, go, walk the promise line and see where it leads. And he does. You already knew that. He does. Verse 4, Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was, 75 years old when he set out for Haran, and he took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abraham obeys. Abraham agrees to go with this plan. If not audibly, he agrees with his feet. He packs his bags, he gathers his people, and he goes. With one foot in front of the other, he leaves everything. Abram trusts the promise. And so does Lot, who is his nephew. Nephew of his brother, of one of Abe's brothers who had died. And so they had taken him in. So Lot, I don't know if he has a choice or not, but he's part of this entourage. And then also Sarai, Abram's wife. I have no idea if she had any questions about this when he came and said, by the way, I just met this God, and he said to go, so we're going to go. But I can imagine there might be a few. There are numerous times where I believe this wife of Abram might have a lot of questions of her spouse. But she goes too, and they travel from Haran to Canaan about 500 miles, probably moving maybe 20 miles a day. It takes them over a month. And then verse 5 says, and they arrived there. And as you read on a little bit longer, verse 7 says that God says to them, this is it, which in the NIV version sounds more like this, to your offspring I will give this land. But as for Abram and all the company with them, it's not theirs yet. The land is meant for them. The land is meant for the offspring, for those that will come, but currently there are not any offspring to inherit this land, and it's actually occupied by the Canaanites, who are also distant relatives through Noah. So it's not time for Abram to settle in, and so they go. And in verses 6 through 9, the summary is this. They continue to travel. They stop in Shechem. They stop in Bethel. They go toward the Negev. They stop at these places that will eventually have significance for his descendants. And it appears that it's going well. Abram stops along the way and builds altars. And at the altar, he gives thanks to God, he worships, he calls on the name of the Lord, and they probably get a chance to stay in a few places for some amount of time. And while Abram trusts the promise, the whole entourage keeps moving. He's remembered in the book of Hebrews, which Carter read for us. It says, by faith, I'm going to say Abram, when called to go to a place he would later receive his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. So Abram trusts the promise, even when it's not made real, even when it seems far away, when getting there gets delayed and it seems impossible. But the weather, if you will, starts to change. Verse 10 says, now there's a famine in the land, and Abram went to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. So Abram comes across an obstacle, and it's pretty significant. It's a famine. He is traveling with family, servants, and animals, and now he's in a land that is dry, that is not producing food, So it's scary enough to start out on the bridge, but now imagine the bridge starts to sway over that gorge. And one wonders, how do you trust the promise when you're hungry? How do you trust the promise when you have to figure out how to survive, and apparently God just doesn't rain down food on them while they are there? And the answer is another move. And they move away from this land that will one day be theirs, and they move to Egypt where there's food to spare. Abram and his family enter Egypt, and then it gets worse. He realizes there's a crisis of survival, at least for him. Verse 11, as he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife, I know what a beautiful woman you are. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, that is his wife, and then they will kill me and let you live. So Abram's first words, this is the first thing that he speaks in all of the Bible, and his first words are to say to his wife, I know what a beautiful woman you are. It's a great way to start any conversation. I'm going to offer that. And then he says, but your beauty puts me in danger. He might be killed so that someone else can take hold of his beautiful wife, who's 65 years old, say the scholars. And now the bridge is really swaying. I mean, the promise is there to hold on to, but Abram's afraid, and he looks down. Instead of looking forward, instead of trusting those promises, he looks down past the bridge, beyond the promise, and all he can see is a fast fall that will end in the end of his life. He forgets about the promise of the future. If God, and the thing is, if God's going to keep God's promises, this isn't an obstacle for God. God's not going to let Abram die in Egypt, but fear gets in there and messes with his mind. The depth of the gorge and the unknown of the future, and he seeks to find his own solution to the problem. So here's his problem. What to do with a beautiful wife? This morning as I was driving, you know how I love a classic song, I could hear this. When you're in love with a beautiful woman, it's hard. You know this one? Everybody wants her. Everybody loves her. Everybody wants to take your baby home. Okay, so one hit wonder. This is the problem. Everybody wants to take his lady home. And so what should he do? And here's Abraham's solution. He lies. He concocts a lie. Verse 13 says, he says to his wife, say you're my sister, and then I'll be treated well for your sake, and my life will be spared because of you. What? What? Here's Abe, who has, Abram, I like to call him Abe, has this relationship with God. He's gotten this far. He has this promise to go on, but he loses sight, and he lets go, and he takes the keeping of the promise into his own hands. He tells a lie that gets him out of danger and puts others at risk. First and foremost, his wife. A friend here this morning said to me, I read this passage, Chris, and you is right. Pharaoh takes Sarai as his wife. She is separated from her husband and forced into an intimate relationship. She has to live as someone else's wife because of this lie. And then he puts the promise of offspring in a nation. He puts the whole thing at risk by taking this into his own hands. And then even the Pharaoh and his household are at risk. The Genesis says that they were afflicted with serious diseases. And they suffered because of the lie. They suffered in their own ignorance. And finally, the truth is revealed. And the Pharaoh chastises Abram and kicks him out of Egypt. And ironically, says one scholar, Abram brings a curse rather than a blessing to the nations. Here's who you're supposed to be a blessing, and what you've brought to these people is a curse. And even more ironically, the Pharaoh is the one who blesses Abram and Sarai as they leave. They leave with Egyptian wealth. This is a foreshadow of something that happens in Exodus. They leave with this wealth, and then they move on. So stay tuned next week for chapters 13 to 15. But here we have this story, and what do we do? Remember last week we said we take these stories and we translate, we interpret, and then we apply. And when we have these kind of narrative passages, we often look at a character and say we should follow their example or not follow their example. And here we have one of those both ands, right? Of course we would say that we would emulate Abram and his willingness to trust God's promise and go into an unknown future. But we would not want to follow Abram in his losing his mind and telling this lie and trying to take things into his own hands. I am grateful for this character, for his faithfulness and his failure, because they are all too familiar. Abram gets commended for his faith not because he was perfect or because he was faithful every minute. He's commended because he put one foot in front of the other when he didn't know where he was going. When he was at his best, he trusted the promise and trusted the one who made it, because ultimately every story is actually about God. We get Abram in this story, but we learn things about God in this place. And this one tells us that we can trust God's promises as we move forward. This story tells us that God makes promises with human beings. Later we're going to find out, we're going to get a bigger word for that and call it a covenant. That God makes agreements with people. And in those agreements and promises, God's faithfulness always prevails. And we are invited to join in the blessings of belonging to Yahweh. For us, the application is to trust the promises, even when we cannot see what is ahead. So here we have Jesus standing before us to say, follow me. Follow me into the future. I'm not going to tell you exactly when or where. I'm not going to tell you when you'll see all the blessings and the promise that the blessings that I have promised. But the promises create the rungs of our bridge. The promises are there. Jesus says things like this: someday I'm going to make everything all new. One day there'll be no tears or pain. I have plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Someday your enemies, all enemies, will be vanquished. Someday justice will roll down like a mighty water. One day I'm going to come and bring you home with me. So we have this bridge made of these promises, but it's an ancient bridge that sometimes starts to sway. Some things make it sway. Yesterday was a swayy day. When you heard that in our community someone thought it was okay to take someone else's life, and he's still at large. Whatever it is, there are things that make our bridge sway from day to day, make it feel wobbly, make it feel unstable. And we have to find our best practices. The best practices, I think, as we see in this story, are first and foremost, don't look down. Don't look down. Keep your eyes focused on the one who made the promise. The second is resist the temptation to try to find another way. When the bridge starts to sway, resist the temptation to try to fix it or to do it, but look to God and see, how is this promise going to keep me going? To borrow from Barbara Brown Taylor, she says, all you have to do is believe in the bridge more than you believe in the gorge. Believe in the bridge more than you believe in the depth of the canyon below. You can trust the promise. You can trust the promises because the one who made them is trustworthy. The promises are the rungs of that bridge, and Jesus becomes the side rails. The one who says, I will be with you. Everywhere you go, and no matter how much it sways, I am in this with you. This is my own little tiny story of how I experienced this once. In the year 2000, I had a youth ministry position that I loved. I had been working there for 7 years, and I had seen a class of students go from sixth grade to graduating from high school. And mostly I was content with my job and happy to be there, but another opportunity had caught my eye. So in January of 2000, I applied for a campus position at a local Christian school. And I began to think, this is the job that God has for me. This is the next ministry step for me. And so I spent all the spring months starting to plan. I planned chapel services, and I planned themes, and I planned ways to teach the Bible to kids, and thought about being on a school campus because I love schools, and I love school. And I was getting excited for change. And then in May, 5 months after the process began, I was released from candidacy. They said, we're going with somebody else. And I was crushed. And I was so confused because I still love my job. I love my church, but I was sad. It was a loss of a dream that I had had. So one day I went to the Arboretum, which is near to our house, and I brought my journal, and I sat down on a bench to think. And as I sat on the bench, I heard this voice in my head say, it's time. Now, that doesn't happen to me very frequently, actually maybe never again. It's not a regular occurrence, but it was this loud and clear sound in my mind that said it's time. It was time to move on, to leave the position that I was in and to follow God's lead with no plan ahead. I waited for the voice to continue. It's time to move on, and here's where I'm sending you, Chris. Here's what I got laid out for you. Nope, it was pretty silent after that. It meant at that time it was time to leave, and I would have to trust God for what would come next. My own little journey of stepping into the unknown and trusting God's promises. Very small compared to what Abram went through and what so many people do. But what I couldn't see then was that 25 years later, I'd be here. That we'd be here together, and all of the things that came in between are a reminder to trust God's promises. We don't get to know what 20 years from now holds. We don't honestly know what about 2 minutes from now holds. But God has promised, I have something for you. I will be with you. I want to bless you. I am in this with you. And is inviting us to say, step into this future. Walk steadily on the promise that I have made. And when the bridge starts to sway, keep looking forward and hold on tight, because I've got you in this. So whatever it is that you are stepping into right now, maybe you've graduated from high school or you're moving to a new age of school next year. That's a big deal. Or maybe it's your kid that's doing that kind of thing. Maybe there's a diagnosis or a doctor's appointment or something this week and the bridge feels like it's swaying. Maybe it's employment or unemployment. Whatever, there are so many things that figure into our lives. Trust the promise. Step out onto that bridge and hold on tight to those rails and see where God will lead. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for your word. Thank you for these stories about people who are faithful and also who are not faithful, because we know what that is like. Lord, you are constantly calling us to come near to you. Jesus, you say, follow me. And you don't give a lot of details about where it is that you're going to lead. So, Lord, make us brave. Make us faithful. Help us to promise or trust the promises that you have made, and to hold on tight as you lead us into our future. And Lord, when we can't trust them for ourselves, surround us with people who will walk with us and help us make each step of the way. We pray this, Jesus, in your name. Amen.